Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shannon Attack.
Is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated offers the maximum discount on Privateer Press products. When you order $30 or more, you'll receive free or reduced shipping. You can find the web store at www.discountgamesinc.com. Welcome to Chain Attack, the War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm your host, Trevor, and I play Crucible Guard from time to time.
Hello, Trevor, who plays Crucible Guard from time to time. I'm Jay, and I've made a dark pact with the Infernals.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you'd make a dark pact with the forces of time.
No, I don't think so.
Clockatrices, come on.
Oh, well... I mean,
it's a dark merchant pact. Let's put it that way.
I like to think of it as win-win situations. I create win-win situations where I sell clockatrices to.
I mean, most parties in the transaction are happier, from what I can tell, Jay.
Yeah.
Am I a party to the transaction?
Well, I don't think so. I think you're one of the. Yeah, you're one of the. The economists call it. Externalities. Yeah, you're an externality.
I'll get that on a shirt.
A port.
Clockatrice externality.
Nice. Yes, that's good. I like it. I'm Josh, and I dream of bog trogs.
I'm really
so excited for that list.
Our next. So the dojo that goes live after this, we spend way too much time talking about. Josh's candidacy for city council.
Vote Wheeler for C5.
And also the pressing topic of the city of Ammon, which is metered water.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to apologize. I apologized on Twitter, but I'm going to apologize again here. I'm sorry if you're a Dojo subscriber. I am offering refunds for that particular episode. I'm sorry.
Whatever. It was great.
It's one of our worst ever. 7 years of podcasts, that one
I'm
shot to the top of the shit heap.
Excited to see the response. Oh, man.
And joining us this week, we have a very special guest, Dr. Norbert Brunhuber.
Man, you've gotten so much better at that, Jay.
Yes, hello, everyone.
Have I?
Yeah, he's very good. But actually, what I'm looking forward to is soon to have a peer-to-peer conversation with my fellow Dr. Trevor Christensen.
No, that's not going to happen.
Okay, we know it's going to happen.
We'll keep the peer pressure on, Norbert.
Here's the problem. The problem is that I know of no school that offers a program that I would consider.
Yet.
Yeah. No.
I'm sure there are. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure there are somewhere out there, but I'm not searching for them. I'm not looking for them. I'm not. Yeah. Actively involved in any way,
I'm just gonna
shape or form.
I'm just gonna.
I remember
that says yet on it.
Yeah, I remember him saying once on Facebook, "I'm not gonna be looking for a new car. I just will not."
Yeah,
a number of years ago. And 6 months later, oh look at my new car.
Somebody should just open up a University of Golf. Isn't that what your car is? I always forget.
It's a Golf R.
Golf R.
It actually doesn't say golf anywhere on it. It says R everywhere.
This is why I'm no good with cars.
One of the reasons.
I was going to say that's
one of legion reasons.
So let's go ahead and talk about the Chain Attack Community Builders, Josh.
Yes, let's do it. Okay, this week's Community Builder post is on getting new people into the game. Official nominations for people who have shown selflessness, friendliness, and been a big proselytizer for the game and community can be posted here. Now, we didn't get as many nominations as we've gotten in the past on this, so step it up, friends and family out there for next month. But we got some great nominations, and our winner has a international flavor today, which I'm very excited about. So,
sushi flavor or
bratwurst, I guess.
Okay. I like Browers.
Yeah, I love it myself. This nomination was by Chris EV, and he says, I nominate Aurelian Shethiarstil.
Oh, my God.
Oof.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then, thank you, Chris, because then he says, parentheses, Pascal for short. So Pascal. I will send you the name, Jay, on a text.
Please.
And I will type it out really nicely.
Okay.
Okay, so this is what Chris says about Pascal. He says, in the last few years, Pascal has made it his mission to get new players in Germany into the hobby. He's tackled his noble quest in a couple of ways. He started a German community for new players, which I think is really interesting, focused community, with tutorials and Get Started article. It's called Dice and Duty. And he takes the duty part very seriously, spends his time and wife points. Those are an illusion, just so everybody knows. Yeah. He spends his time and wife points traveling to different friendly local game stores across Germany to give demo days. He's also gotten in touch with a German publisher and has collected battle boxes at discount prices to get people into the hobby on the cheap. So thank you, Chris, for the nomination. And congratulations, Pascal / Aurelia. And yeah, next, tell him what he's won, Jay.
We're back around to the Dragon Isle Spirit Award, Josh.
Oh my goodness. The Dragon Isle Spirit is going international. I'm so excited. I think it's gone international before, but you know.
I think so.
My memory and Graham's don't last that long.
Okay. I'm
typing still here, sorry. Okay, there's the text. So next week's nominations are going to be being a good online citizen. And spoiler alert, the prize is wide open at the moment. It's got some nominations in there for people who have shown excellent manners, composure, or citizenship in the greater online community.
Don't make me
go do your posting.
Someone.
That would be amazing.
What, me nominating someone?
Yeah, it'd be scandal ridden, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because I'm going to pick that person too.
So my excitement amp is currently at 11.
Whoa!
Because we have a new Muse on Minis testimonial that was emailed to me today.
Amazing.
So
I must endorse.
Must endorse.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is from Patrick Carolyn. He says, I'm currently in the middle of moving offices at work, and the facilities came by today to move my filing cabinet. I was uncertain whether the bulky piece of furniture would fit in my new space, but luckily it's War Machine Wednesday, and I happen to have my gaming bag and trusty Till Move Line tray on hand. With the help of my fabulous laser precision tools, I was able to accurately determine the exact dimensions of the cabinet. 30 by 18.
Nice.
Ensuring it was placed for maximum feng shui in my new space with just one move. It's safe to say that MoveLine has substantially improved my mental well-being and saved my back from almost certain anguish. Thanks, MoveLine Trey. And he has included pictures of the use of his MoveLine in appropriate feng shui fashion.
Wow, I can feel the appropriate vibes just rolling off of this credenza.
And Chain Attack fashion, as we yes. are an audio podcast, audio medium, showing pictures once again.
So you can see pictures of the use of this testimonial on the Chain Attacker Muse on Minis Facebook page.
Why would you go and ruin it like that?
That's fair. That's fair. I should have just like kept the pictures for myself.
Yeah, you should have never released them.
What you should have done is typed out a written description of the picture.
Like when your old bot 2400 baud modem wouldn't download the pictures and it would just have a text replacement for it.
Yeah, well, technically that's still
yeah,
that is, I know still there, still but happens, your modem doesn't fail to download the small pictures anymore.
The best part, the only part that our fabulous user Patrick Carolyn left out was that after getting this drawer appropriately placed in feng shui style, that then the MoveLine tray allowed him to just put all of those measurement tools away precisely. It is
true.
The greatest part of the MoveLine tray. Clean up.
Jay?
Yes, yes.
I want to add another, you know, user-friendly suggestion for the Muse on Minis line. I'm taking my inspiration from our friend and host, Josh, who seems to be on endless ways to slim himself down. So I'm wondering when the next Slimline Pro line of tokens will be coming out and templates. Slimline.
I mean, you should get working on the Slimline girdle, Jay.
I
can just put all the measurement sticks in the girdle pockets.
Ooh, yeah, like a Bandero.
Yes! That'd be like a Chewbacca at the table measuring.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't
There's
think it
no
was...
room on the tables with SR 2019 anymore.
You're
so this
right!
This is a brilliant idea, Jay.
I didn't think that a pocket protector nerddom could be like the bar.
Leveled up.
Yeah, the
right,
bar
right,
could
right.
be raised.
Yeah.
But you guys just did it.
Oh, amazing. I'm pre-ordering mine, Jay.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So, other exciting things from Muse on Minis. We have the final Trollblood officially licensed Steamroller Zone has been approved by Matt Wilson.
Oh, nice.
And is now for sale.
It's in the wild?
Yes. So here is the audio review of the new zones from Josh and Trevor.
The glow alone makes me feel like a Trollblood. Really, I am amazed at what Nigel puts together out there.
Now, these are very impressive. They look like the runes on, like, they look like they're on Krellstones, basically a retro faction. Which I should go out and commiserate with Nigel, because I'm pretty sure that the troll symbol, it looks like it should be like balanced, like that's those three sides are all the same size.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They're not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're off by a little bit. And it is so weird. Anytime I've tried to do anything like graphics-wise with that symbol, from the symbol that I've taken out of basically their materials.
Products, yeah.
Yeah, it is strangely off in a weird way.
Well, there you have it. So by the time this is live, we will be have already started shipping out Oblivion box sets, which...
With hermits.
Has the Hermit of Henthold in it, yes. a topic that will likely come up
very soon
later in the podcast.
It has, you're selling Hermits of Henthold, which come with the Oblivion rule set, and
yeah, yes. I mean, it's
yeah, those are included.
Yeah, that's the bonus feature of the Hermit.
And we joke, but I will say that we have two games left in our Oblivion campaign that we've been doing, and big kudos to Privateer Press. I think that they did a really good job on the campaign book.
I cannot argue.
And sometime soon, we will likely have another Fluffisode on Chain Attack. So,
yes, where we can learn more of our beloved Gore.
he's dead.
Quiet, heathen! I did. So, random Gore facts. I had someone tweet to me that the way that Gore died is that Gore was like literally a mountain.
Okay.
And
the great fathers may their names
killed
ever
him by
be cursed.
Yeah, killed him by building their cities in the mountain.
Strip mining.
Dirty. They strip mined
and what would you expect from
their
a dwarf?
God. Right. Yeah.
It's appropriate. Fair point. He probably was happy the whole month time.
Okay, Josh. It is I did go over the discount game stuff. That was Oblivion, so get that. It's time for a Dank Doom meme.
There are so many amazing Dank Doom memes in the wild, Jay. I want you to know that I appreciate your turning me on to the Dune Siege posting group.
Okay.
But it is like, it is definitely like panning for gold. Right? There is a lot of garbage that rolls through the pan there. And
that's true.
Occasional great, great nuggets of joy. But I'm not sharing one from there today, because the Dank Doom memes Twitter account came through for me once more. This is the... What is this, Trevor? The jealous girlfriend?
Yeah, it's a jealous girlfriend.
Jealous girlfriend meme, okay. So the guy who is labeled Leto II, mm-hmm. Duke Leto, and he's holding the hand of his girlfriend labeled Duncan, Idaho. And he's looking over his shoulder at a girl labeled Duncan Idaho.
That is so far out there. If you have not read the book,
it's so stupid. I love it.
That is one of the...
You should start selling copies of that book on your website.
Just sell it as a bonus with Hermits of Henthold.
What we need to do...
No, you should sell it as a bonus with Clockatrices and just raise the price on those. Right.
We need to... I need to start selling signed copies of Dune where the three of us sign the cover plate.
Oh, man.
Most worthless trinket.
I am a simple man. I will freely admit it. All right. What's next, Jay?
Okay. I think we're finally ready to talk about the WTC. So, Norbert.
Yes, sir.
We haven't really discussed anything or done any planning on this. So, why don't you just lead the way? What do we want to talk about?
Okay. So, it is WTC time, which has become a bit of a, I think, a institutional moment on the War Machine calendar, insofar we get lots of data in from the fact that we lock the lists about 2 to 3 weeks ahead of the event and then publish all those lists. This is interesting because it's a lot of information all at once. It comes from all different parts of the world at the same time. We have, even now, through the magic of Conflict Chamber, lots of stats, which make it even easier to try to take a look at the information there. And basically, it becomes a bit of a snapshot, I think, of the meta, and certainly of what we can look forward to in terms of the competition itself that'll be happening in Belgium this year, from 3 weeks from now. And for the audience at home, I've been involved with the WTC since its start, and in this particular year, I'll be there as a referee.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah. So what I thought would be kind of interesting is, first of all, everybody likes to say this is a team event, and so the data doesn't really matter, and and we should go playing, you know. But the fact of the matter is, I think, actually, having looked at the lists now, that there are some clear indications that are undeniable about what lists are powerful and what people want to play as a result of the way the Mark III post-Oblivion meta looks like, that can't be denied, even if you factor in the fact that there is that the team dynamic. And for people who don't know, the reason that team dynamic is important is because there is a pairing process that goes on between the five players of each team. So there is a bit of a strategy in terms of trying to get certain matchups together. But honestly, I think this year in particular, the builds that people have been using are probably much more indicative of just the strength of the list rather than any kind of internal team strategy that they may have come up with. What do you guys think about that?
Sure, I would agree with that. And I also think that some of the naysayers of the team event when it comes to looking at the stats probably overstate their point. I mean, I understand and I believe that there are some, to some small degree, they are correct, that there is some adjustments that are made in a team event that don't happen in a normal event. But the length to which that happens, I think, is much smaller than what those naysayers present. Does that make sense? Like, I think that it takes a much smaller portion of, I think people still build certain things. They just may worry about one or two matchups less than what they normally would because they're hoping that they won't get paired into those. But for the most part, they're still building lists that are very similar to what they would take to a tournament.
Yeah, that's very well stated. So
you said that you feel like there are some things about the state of the meta that you've gleaned that are kind of indisputable. So why don't we start going over those? What do you think are some of the things that have stuck out to you about the meta?
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, I mean, we're going to start, I think, on a high level and then talk about some of the lists. And I'm going to refer to some nice charts that got put together, and I'm looking up the person's name, but when we talk about them, I'll mention it again. But let's just start with the raw stats that you can find at the Conflict Chamber page for the event. And the first thing that immediately strikes you when you take a look at the stats is the fact that the highest number of players of a particular faction is Circle by a large margin. So 60 plus, there's 64 teams at the event, five people per team. So that's 320 players at the event, and 60 of them are playing Circle, whereas the next grouping is all in the 40. Low 40s.
Lower than that. The next group is Grimkin at 40, and then everything's below 40 else.
Yeah. So okay, there's a little group there. Yeah, thanks.
So one of the things that's almost always happened at every WTC is that there's one faction who's kind of the outlier, and you know it can be somewhat debatable on whether or not that faction actually has balance issues or not. But in the early days of the WTC, the faction that was like this was Krix, and I don't have the numbers in front of me or what the ratios were, but my gut feeling is that there was probably an even more egregious ratio of Krix players than Circle players right now. Do you think that's correct or incorrect?
I wish I'd.
Like, I feel like it was in the 70s, high 70s, when Krix was in its heyday.
You mean number of
players?
So that number is probably pretty close. My problem is I didn't come prepared, but if I remember right, there was one year where Krix had somewhere in the 30% range. And right now, Circle, we're talking about in the 20-some percent range.
Okay.
And so, you're right. There was a time when there was a, it seems like there was an event where Crix had somewhere around 30% of the field was Crix.
Okay, so it has been in the foggy recollections of our minds, we think that it was potentially had worse.
It's pretty rough.
Percentages than this, but so that's one data point. But I guess another question is, just going off of this data point, where you have one faction that's at 60, the next one is at 40 players. The 60 players is basically 20% of the event. Do you think that that is too much of an outlier?
So one of the issues that I have with the Crix correlation is that we have more factions now.
Okay.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay, so
it would be harder to get the percentage up that high.
Yeah, very good point.
At least to some small degree. I mean, the fact that you've added in Infernals, Crucible Guard, that just weren't there before. I mean, it's everybody had a larger portion of the pie at that point.
Sure.
So, but I agree that even then, that there was a bigger divide between Crix and the rest of the field then than there is between Circle and the rest of the field now, in my opinion.
Okay, so that feels like an answer that Josh should give when he is...
Yeah, I'm trying to help him out.
...running for his city council seat. You know, answer the question that you wish you were asked.
I feel that metering is a complicated issue, so let me talk about...
I mean, do you think that this number of Circle players is problematic?
Yes.
What do you think, Norbert?
Yeah, it's not... Okay, I'm going to give not a political answer, but did definitely some context. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the next grouping, because that helps my case. The next grouping, as Trevor pointed out, is in the actually high 30s. So Grimkin at 40, Scorn 38, Protectorate at 38, Retribution at 30. And let's leave it at that. So that's, and I think what's really, I started my conversation by saying that the WTC is kind of a snapshot of the meta right now. And I really think that's probably a very good order of the top factions right now. And so you see there's a grouping of in the high 30s, well, 30 for Retribution. But then, you know, Crix, Crucible Guard, Mercenaries, Kador are in the 20s. So there is definitely a hierarchy, as I'm trying to say. However, there's quite a few different factions within the same kind of general grouping. So it's quite a few factions that are viable, if you look at it from that point of view. So 60 isn't terribly far outside there, but they are significantly far above the rest. And so, you know, when it was Crix is a bad example, but when it was Signar on top like this, it was due to one caster, you know, Haley 2, let's say.
Right.
Here they have a very nice spread of.
Yeah,
casters,
I see about half say, a dozen and, different. And casters.
Turns out that having the best unit in the game that can be played with lots of casters helps, but. So here's why I think you guys are wrong.
He means the Ravagers, okay. Right?
Yes. So let me preface this by saying, by no means am I a Circle apologist.
Wait, how can you say you guys are wrong? You didn't even get my answer yet.
Oh, what do you think, Josh?
It doesn't matter.
Okay. Thanks.
Is that what you're going to tell everybody in Ammon about their water?
No. That's a serious issue, Trevor.
Oh.
So.
All right. Go on, Circle apologist.
I fucking hate Circle. And I do think that Circle is the strongest faction right now. But the reality is that there's always going to be a strongest faction. And I kind of feel like if you... Do I think that if... Let's say that we compared these numbers and percentages or whatever... So do I think that, you know, there's 60 Circle players and 40 Grimkin players. You know, do I think that Circle's 33% more powerful than Grimkin? No. Do I think that Circle, I think that they are the strongest faction. Do I think that they're such an outlier that it's a problem? Not really.
So,
I think that of course the, in a competitive event like this, competitive players are going to flock to gain a small edge. And I think that's what they're doing.
How small do you think that
edge
is? Oh,
nice choice of words.
I mean, so let's say, I know you can't translate this into numbers, but let's throw out some numbers here. Let's say that Circle is 5% better than the next best faction, Grimkin.
Okay.
Okay. Would you say that 5% is enough to show, to give this variation? That 5% is enough to get enough people to change?
Yeah. Well, I'm just throwing out... wild ass numbers. you know, how much better is Circle than, you know, that tier that Norbert was talking about? Grimkin's Scorn Protectorate. You know, I think that somewhere in the 5 to 10% range is correct.
Okay.
And I think that's fine.
I don't, because 5 to 10% is a pretty significant margin when you're talking about win rate in.
Well, I don't mean win rate.
I do, because
I don't mean win rate. If we're talking about win rate, I was talking about strength of faction, like, which is a completely nebulous. If we're talking about win rate, then
hold on, I'm taking notes on keeping it nebulous.
excellent. So it's going to be a little bit tough to say, because even at the end of this, when we get the win rate numbers at the end,
I won't be shocked to see Circle 5 to 10% higher than.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be in the 60s, mid-60s.
Huh? I would not be shocked to see Circle at 60% and Grimkin at 55.
But I don't understand. Like, have people not gunned for it? Are they not gunning?
Yeah, they are.
They
going
always
to.
Do. I'm telling you that the thing is
I think I would be surprised to see it at 60%. I'm expecting it more at like 55. And part of the reason why I say that is because I think that you are going to have the best players who are going to have great win percentages with it. But when you have 60 players, there's a wide variety of player skill levels at the WTC, and there's going to be there's going to be some players, Circle players, who are pulling down that average.
You can say that about every faction, though.
I think that it ends. I'm to an extent, yes.
I think that. Well, I mean, it's interesting. We're talking about things that we don't even know about at this point. But I would not be shocked to see Circle come through. And yes, Josh, you're correct. They're going to be gunned for, but that's always true. Every year, the top faction gets gunned for, and they still show why they're the top faction.
Right, but here is here is the. It'll be very interesting to see how it plays out, because in a way, if you compare this to last year, everyone was like, "Oh my God, Gatsby 3, Asphyxia 3, sorry, Slayers." And Crix did fine, but they weren't really an outlier. And in a way, it kind of felt like the meta was peaking at a point where they were kind of solving Crix in that timeline. It doesn't feel like we're in that.
We also said that, though. We knew. I mean, everybody kind of knew that the Gatsby 3 was at the end of his run, and that it was
But there were also people who were like, you know, War Machine is such an imbalanced game, and oh my God, Slayers, and
I was never on that. But it is interesting. I don't think that Circle's on that point, though. I don't think they're on the downturn. I don't think people figured them out.
No, I don't think so.
All right. Do we want to talk about individual factions?
I want to peg each of you down on what you think the win percentage is going to be for Circle. So I'm thinking 55.
Yeah, I'm more like the low 60s. It's like 63, pushing 65.
I'm at 60.
Okay.
48.
Okay. Let's tackle the other before we jump into factions.
The other mechanical elephant in the room.
Let's talk about the other thing that's been the hot topic of discussion. And one way that's cute to illustrate this is that there are more Clockatrices being played at the WTC than there are Trollbloods models, period.
That's nasty.
This is a true statement.
Wow.
God.
I mean, you could probably add a couple of factions together. It's probably more models than Infernals, Minions, and Convergence added together.
Oh, probably, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is pretty ridiculous. I'd like to know what the average is per list that has Clockatrices in. I'm assuming it's probably like 4.5 or something like that.
I think it was like 3.6.
Oh, I thought it was per player. Sorry. I was doing 6 per player.
Per list, I think, was 3.3 or something.
Okay. And,
yeah.
Per player is 6. Okay. I'm not shocked by those numbers at all. Not shocked at all. That's saying something, knowing that. Do we feel that this is... I'm going to ask Jay, because Jay's played more Clockatrices than probably any of the rest of us together. Not necessarily against them, but played with them.
Mm.
Do you feel like this is a matter of they will figure it out in time, or a matter of it might need to be tweaked down a little bit?
So, this is bad radio, but like I just have...
That's our whole show, Jay.
Oh, that's true. Very on brand. I just have a hard time caring. Like, would it be fine if the Clockatrice got nerfed? Yeah, that'd be okay. Like, would it be fine if it didn't get nerfed?
Okay, yeah, I mean, stop talking to Jay the store owner for a moment and talk to Jay the player.
No, well, I mean, this is kind of Jay the player too, because and some of it, I guess this is kind of my like grumpy old man who climbed up the hill both ways to school in the snow, and you know what, like. You young whippersnappers who are all upset about your clockatrices. Like, back in my day, I had a fucking deal with Denny 1. And I had a deal with Body and Soul. And I played Haley 2. And, like, you millennials bitching about your clockatrices.
I thought it was Gen Z by this point.
Yeah, dude. Probably. I mean, in real talk, do I think the clockatrice is an outlier? Yes. It's obviously an outlier. Do I think that it's problematic? I mean,
I thought it was problematic from the beginning. Like when I first saw it, I'm like, what the hell are they thinking?
I mean, that's okay. Give it a tweak. That's fine. I honestly, like one of the suggestions that Aaron Well had was that it should only be able to be placed once per turn. When an aspect breaks.
I think that makes a lot of difference, though. I mean, how often does it get placed twice?
Honestly, that is more of a psychological.
Yeah, that doesn't seem
like why go after it if I got to kill it?
Well, no, I mean, it's kind of putting a Band-Aid on the negative play experience.
Yeah, right.
Which, in some ways, is what
I mean, that's like saying
fuels a lot of this issue.
Seems like that would be very patronizing if I were a a Grimkin player, and my opponent started complaining about it. I said, yeah, but it can only be placed once a turn. I mean, seriously, that doesn't really solve the problem in my
mind. So I assume that I am here alone with my six clock a try and my stack of money from selling them. And everyone else on this podcast thinks that they need to be like
not
adjusted.
Not really. Not I mean, I haven't been abused by them enough to like overcome my sort of like inborn enjoyment used. So
okay,
like,
okay.
my default setting is give the meta time. That's my my default setting.
Sure.
And how much time do they need though? I mean, they've been out a while now.
I don't know. Have but they? I'm just saying that as my gauge is going up away from give the meta time to nerf it, I'm not there yet because I haven't played enough games. I'm not saying the meta hasn't analyzed it yet. I'm just saying that personally, I'm still in the give it a little more time phase because I thought for sure that Slayers and Gatsby 3 needed to be changed and it never was.
Right.
And I don't think
that took about 6 months for the meta to solve.
I think it was longer than that, more like 9 to 12. But regardless, I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon of nerf it yet, but I definitely, like, I look at it and go, that's something that should be looked at. It should be considered. It should be tested.
And in some ways, I don't know. Again, I'm not a game designer, and so figuring out what's the solution to fix it, I don't know. But there's parts of it where I'm like, well, why is it defense 13?
This is what I'm going to point out. Yeah, I mean, everybody's focused on the phasing ability.
Right.
It's the full package.
Right.
It literally has benefits in shooting. It's got benefits in hitting. It can be buffed up so it's not pillow fisted quite easily. It has the movement abilities. It's a construct, so there's fury issues. You know, it's a full package that is the issue.
It's a construct that auto heals.
that's the one that's bothered me the most playing against it is the auto heal ability. Because I'm like, well, damn, I got it down to the I sent in the heavy, I took out the one aspect,
the spirit or
whatever it is, and it teleported away. I would not feel nearly as bad about it if it didn't just auto heal the next turn and be like, oh, I'm just fine.
If it didn't just turn back the clock on that damage.
If
stop, Josh.
If you manage to take out two aspects and it's left alive with one aspect, it's going to have a 66% chance to be fully functional at the start of its turn.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. Yeah. If nothing else happened but that went away, I think that would be more than enough.
That would definitely be enough.
So, all right. Do we want to talk about the Hermit then? As long as we're talking about all the models that there's
about
too many
problematic
of.
Models.
Yeah.
So I feel pretty strongly that 30% is fine on
that 30% of the field is carrying a single model.
Is that what that means? Is that what the stat is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
206 happened before. Hermits.
What was the percentage when Gorman? When Gorman was in his heyday, it was probably pretty similar.
Oh,
it was
not that.
There's a reason why when we talked about the Hermit and I said I expect him to be at 30% next year, I felt like that was a pretty accurate number, because going back, I remember the number of Iris 2s and Gormans that were in lists in Mark II.
Right.
And I do feel like those models were problematic there, and I do feel like a model that is in 30% of all the lists, that is problematic.
Well, okay, so I'm going to throw your argument right back at you, because when we had Gorman and Iris 2, there was actually a pretty small percentage of the factions that could take Gorman, and every fucking faction can take the Hermit.
Yes, yeah. But he hasn't been released yet.
Like that's ever stopped Europe.
I'm just saying, you're right, it hasn't stopped some of them, but I guarantee you there's somebody on here, at least one, and probably way more, who do not have him in their list specifically because of that.
Okay.
So I think that the number's going to swell before it settles back down to this similar number.
That's probably true, yeah.
Hmm.
And what are your takes on the Hermit, Norbert?
There's a lot that didn't... I don't know. Look, I was talking about this earlier with some other folks. Part of the problem is Privateer Press's new way of releasing models and rules lately. So the issue is that this model's rules have been out since Gen Con.
Yes.
And so that means loads of time for people to proxy this model and to get practice games in, to figure it out, and to want to play it. And they're clearly seeing some sort of advantage of that. So just because the model isn't going to be out until a couple of days before the WTC isn't really the point. The point is, when are the rules out? When is this thing essentially legal for play? Now, in the old days, this wasn't the case. Models used to come out at a convention, and you could only use it at the convention. Sometimes they weren't even rules for them. But now, Privateer Press is elected to have full-fledged official rules in War Room months in advance of the event. So I can't blame people
I guess I'm a little confused. I mean, how is what happened at this Gen Con any different from what's happened at any number of Gen Cons?
Because that goes to the second half of this peculiarity. This model can be used by anybody. It's relatively untested, so it seems very powerful on paper, at least, if not in real life. And so consequently, everybody will want that particular model. And then it was the fact that it is released only 2 days ahead of the event, and in a way that is very difficult for some people to deal with. In other words, we may not be able to get those models in. We certainly not be able to paint them. They're attached to a bunch of other books and things as part of the campaign box, etc. And so you're led into this position where people are wanting to use a model because they know how to use it and can't really get ready access to the model when it comes out. And so you're kind of left with the situation you have now, where people are doing what they can to proxy it, and everybody can use it, as I said, which is an unusual thing. Not very many models are usable by every faction.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously true. I am basically the only other example of that is Eilish that I can think of.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, do you think that the number of people, the number of lists he's in is an issue? Do you think that he's too good?
Well, so this is where I reserve a little bit of judgment, because as opposed to the Clock of Trees, which I think has been out enough long enough for people to try to figure out ways around it, the Hermit is not. It's been only tested now for 3 months, probably not in many real games or tournaments, I should say. And so the hype might be a little higher here than is warranted. So I think we'll see post-WTC how people feel about that Hermit.
Okay, so I think it's time that we answer the most important question of this entire show.
Yeah.
Thirds or quarters?
Best team name?
No, thirds or quarters.
Dang it.
If you look at the Minions and the Infernals pie charts,
the
Minions are quarters.
Yes.
The Infernals are perfect thirds.
So
quarters or thirds?
The Minions chart is superior, of course. Okay,
the quarters. You're a quarters man.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on right now.
I don't think anyone does.
It's more visual, visual things.
Visual humor for an audio medium. Yes.
Basically, because there's three Infernals players and two Minions players, it makes pretty charts, and that has fascinated.
Yeah, shout out to Russia Aurora for taking my Jaga Jaga.
Listen, just because there's three and two does not mean they could make perfect quarters and thirds like they have done so. I mean, they've collaborated. I'm convinced of this.
Also, Ireland Swift. I hope they win with Carver so bad.
Dude, so let's talk about that. The bottom part of the grid, we were talking about the top part, but the bottom part of the grid is a little bit of a sad story. Minions is at the bottom with two, but I think that's low even for a small faction.
Yes.
Infernals is very low, but they're quite new, and they also might be hard to get the models of, so that's not so surprising either.
Right.
Convergence is low, but they've never been terribly popular, probably because of the limited range of their models, so that's fine.
It haven't necessarily been fully updated since Mark III. Hopefully,
yeah, exactly.
The CID post Oblivion and the new models they have kind of gets them fully up to speed.
I'm actually surprised by the minion two-player minion thing. Are you surprised, Josh?
I'm a little surprised. Yeah.
Okay. Because I didn't think they were. I mean, I'm not saying that they were on the top of the game or anything, but I didn't think they were that bad.
They
off.
Feel much more competitive now than they did in Mark II. And these are
okay. That's a low bar.
Yeah, I mean,
it's also like at the start of Mark III when you saw minions being played by some of the top players at the WTC.
Yeah, that's true.
And some of
their
that,
theme updates have been a little nerfy.
And granted, some of that was
Dark Horse.
Well, no, it was like kind of some wacky rules interactions with like throwing your own stuff and being able to threat a really long ways, and then
was Rask and the Super Friends.
Part of the changes to power attacks was made kind of as particularly because of what felt like some crazy minion stuff.
That's true. That is true.
Well, so, I will say that I'm surprised. The two players is surprising to me. I wouldn't have expected them to be a lot, but I would have expected to be more on the tune of...
More in the range of, like, convergence?
Yeah, the seven to ten range, and that's kind of what I expected. And maybe, you know, there's been some poaching by other factions. You know, maybe some of those players are playing Scorn now, for example.
Right. No, that's true.
So I don't really know, but it is surprising to me. The other ones...
Oh, yeah, we don't have the Disciples of Agony stat, do we?
I think we do somewhere. Yeah, let me look it up while you guys talk.
Okay, go ahead, Trevor. What do you got for us?
Anyway, I was Disciples of Agony's 30 lists.
Oh, well, there you go.
Oh, okay, got it.
Then we have 32 minion players. are you going to argue with me?
No.
It was... quick side note. I just recently released an episode of The Meta where David Potts was the guest, and he basically was like, all Disciples of Agony all the time. This is our best theme list. You should play double Disciples.
Nice.
Yeah, it's actually maybe not 30 players. It's 30 lists. A player could potentially be playing double Disciples.
Whatever, it's 30 players till you prove me wrong.
I'm not going to go through and find them.
So. Two people are playing that. Two players are playing double lists with Disciples.
There are four Swamp Whores in the Scorn entries.
Yes. I feel a lot better about that.
There are 12 Pharaoh Valkyries in the Scorn injuries.
There you go. So yeah, I mean, do you? I guess
they're better, but they basically there's other factions that are a lot easier to win with, and people they got poached basically.
So can we have a little party for a moment for Signar only having 11 players?
Yeah.
well on their path to being my favorite faction.
I honestly think that this is mostly just a timing issue. I think if the WTC was held 4 months in the future, that these numbers would probably look quite a bit different for Signar.
Why?
Like, you think they're headed back up?
I think that Signar is going to have a little bit of a renaissance with when the new Morrowind models come out.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you'll start seeing some people doing the new theme list with
you're not singing my tune.
Morrowinds and Thamorites, cats and dogs living together.
I thought you liked the Thamorites.
I do. I don't like the Morrowinds.
Well, you're supposed to now.
I don't.
you're part of the Infernals problem.
Listen,
then.
I like the Morrowinds as long as they don't have a swan on their back.
Anyways, it'll be interesting to see, but I believe that Signar is going to see a competitive resurgence.
Okay, well, let's talk about Trollbloods, because clearly...
Yes, please.
There's only 9 players playing Trollbloods. And there's been a lot of talk about where Trollbloods are standing. And we have Norbert here, who is has been playing Trolls at some point in the past. Arnie, you're not playing Trolls right now, are you?
No.
Well, that was a fast questioning.
Are you currently playing Kator?
Yeah, I'm back to Kator again. Yeah. I mean, it was terrible. And I feel awful because I literally just finished painting them all up. They were looking really
great. Yeah, they look great. Yeah.
I was having a... Thank you.
Are they just not fun anymore?
Yeah.
Currently, I mean?
Because everybody... Yeah, they weren't fun. Everybody's got their number. You have to play beyond perfect games with them. And Steamroller 2019, it was a real blow.
Yeah.
Because it's so wide and so live that it was just like, this is ridiculous.
So if I could sum up the issue that Trolls have right now, because I'm on the outside looking in. I'm used to play Trolls a long time ago, and I've always wanted to go back. But from the outside looking in, I can see two issues that I would have if I were a current Trollblood player. And you tell me if this is the sum of it or if there's more. But I look at it and go, 2019, okay, there's no way I can spread out with a stone. There's no way I can cover all my bases easily and be able to buff each other. And then two, it feels like there's anti-healing everywhere right now.
Do they not have sweet ambushers?
Yeah, anti. I'm throwing those two together. Anti-tough, anti-healing, yeah, are everywhere. I mean, I play Crucible Guard, so I have it in every list.
I think the Bear Handlers are some of the best ambushers in the game.
Oh, nice.
They are the best ambushers.
They're super
in the
cool,
game.
Too.
Sure.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, and sorry, Jay. I just wanted to add in to Trevor's list. I also, they're quite vulnerable to shooting.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, really?
And there's a lot of high-powered shooting now.
Huh. That's not one that I would have pegged, I guess. But with the stone.
The stone doesn't help that much because it's such high-powered shooting. And the clouds help. And this is why people play
Kolgrimma
quite a bit. But there's quite a bit of cloud mitigation out there as well.
Yeah, that's true, too. There is quite a bit of cloud mitigation.
Hmm.
What do you think? What would you like to see as a framework for a release or maybe change in Trolls that would bring them back to relevance?
Yeah, I mean, in the short term, I would do something like fix up Creel Company, make them into giving them a shooting opportunity of some kind. They have a lot of interesting things. The Hooch Hauler, for instance, if they can get that thing to be a little more effective somehow, it would be really awesome. And then just basically, like I said, Creel Company. There's a whole host of models that I bought that are just not doing anything, like Highwaymen and Scattergunners, things like that. So that's on one level, that they could fix that up with some releases and things. But aside from that, I really don't know. I mean, it's I guess the point is that they want to brick up quite a bit still. And so we need some mechanics to kind of spread that out. Like, so for one of the things I was toying around with some of my dojo buddies was like Madrak 3 and a stone, because he's like a sword of stone, and you could have a stone on like a far side of him and stuff like that. But there was some problems with that as well. But I guess that was the way I was leaning to try to work around the problem.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem I see with that is you're playing Madrak 3.
Yeah, well, this is it. But, you know, the point was I'm trying to find a way to spread the buffs
right out
so that I can actually, you know, spread my army out more.
Okay. Is there any other factions we want to talk about?
How many Judicators
are there? Legion, insofar as, do you feel Legion is actually suffering at 16, or are people just not being inventive with it?
I mean, it's basically where I wish Circle was, so...
it's like that Venn diagram where you can pick two of the three, but you can't have all three.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of my unless I'm playing Legion, then fuck those guys. So I'm fine with where they're at. Yeah.
So
do you think the symptom is that they're one caster faction, and if you don't want to play Kalos one, it's not fun?
I wouldn't call it one caster. I'd call it one theme or one heavily leaned on theme, and that theme plays well to Kalos 1. So I guess that maybe they're hand in hand. Maybe it's semantics, but yeah, I definitely agree that they would need something else to pair with him to be able to go up a little bit. And I don't necessarily care. Actually, I'm kind of with Jay. We have a Legion player that likes to terrorize us, so we don't, you know, fuck that guy.
we kid. But more seriously, so, you know, we have Crix at 24, Crucible Guard 21, Mercenaries 20, Kador 20, Legion River Blight 16. I mean, to me, mm-hmm, it feels like Legion
not that far
is off, kind of in that grouping, and I don't really think that it's that big of an issue.
I don't think it's that egregious, yeah. but I do think that they are a half step behind with
yeah.
their ability to diversify.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I'm actually so.
I also want to go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm actually surprised at the number of Crucible Guard players. So
yeah, I was just going to say that. Amazing. Yeah.
Like, it's so strange to me because I think it was at the ATC, we only had a handful of them. And like, they just, I look at tournament reports and sometimes there's lots of them. And then the next step, I look at them, and there's very few of them. And they just keep going back and forth. And I can't figure out, you know, where are they standing in the
Well,
meta.
Since nine of the Crucible Guard lists use Hermit of Henge Hold, I think that's probably it.
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Clearly, it's the Sylvestro faction.
I will say that I am that if we had had this discussion, say, 9 months ago, I think we probably would have been surprised that Locke would be number two.
Yeah.
At 10 players playing Locke. I'm not surprised, but I think that there was a lot of people who thought that it was going to be Sylvestro and something else, and not Locke. It was Sylvestro McKay or Sylvestro Gearheart. And Locke has sort of come into her own over time. And I'm actually at this point a little surprised that there's only 10 players playing Locke and 19 playing Sylvestro. So,
Yeah. And also, I was just looking at Convergence. She's not as high in Convergence as I thought, because she's really powerful in Convergence.
Let's see. Convergence, there's... I can't find them in the list.
Just one. Huh. Or two, rather.
Only two Locke players in Convergence. Just two. That is surprising to me.
Yeah.
Because they are one of the...
So, I'm...
The ant... She is... Let me rephrase. She is one of the anti-clockatress options out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Very much so.
That's nice.
So, what I want some hot takes on
nice.
Who you guys are picking to win the event.
Can we talk about why there's no Australia?
Yeah, I mean that's an easy answer.
Oh, I don't think it's public knowledge then.
Oh, okay. Well, so here's the lowdown. Spoiler alert. It's really fucking expensive to go to Europe from Australia.
Yeah, I know that.
And it's been kind of the same small subset of people who have been going for quite a while.
Right.
And when they do it, because it's such a long trip, et cetera,
right,
in general,
they make it a big trip.
It's a big trip. They go for a longer amount of time, et cetera. And so, you know, basically everyone was like, I kind of need a WTC off to recuperate.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know that they're making plans to attend next year, but
yeah.
the reality is that it's just a lot.
Too many money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm ready for my hot take, Jay.
Hold on, I want to talk about a couple
of
teams.
Dang it.
I just want to shout out to these teams because for them working hard and getting there and countries we've never seen before. Japan.
Yeah.
Malaysia. I think Lithuania. This is their first year. Am I remembering that right?
Very cool.
Yes, that's correct.
The Malaysia Tigers.
Yes.
Yeah. So those three teams, I think those are the only ones that I noticed. Yeah, those are the only ones that I noticed being new. But I just want to give a big shout out to those communities for working really hard and putting together the teams and making it to the WTC because it's a big commitment and it's difficult for those smaller metas. And I'm just really excited to see more countries get involved.
Hear, hear.
And
that's awesome.
I'm going to just shout out to the Malaysia team. I really, really, really want one of your jerseys. Please.
Send a link for purchase.
Okay, so yes. I want your picks.
I'm contractually obligated to pick Russia Aurora.
Okay.
Because number one, they don't have any circle players.
Okay.
And no, actually, that's number two. Number one, they have minions.
Okay.
I just want to see my Jaga Jaga get the wins, baby.
Okay.
And I think Malak's still pretty
good. Okay. Trevor.
Oh, gosh. I was not actually.
I guess we
you're not ready
gonna,
to actually give
we're
a serious
come back.
Answer.
Norbert, give us your pick.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Canada Polar Bear. I think it's going to be the year this year, Canada.
That's a strong choice. I went back and forth. That was one of the two I was considering, but I'm going to go with my pick being some of your country mates right
yes.
now, and I'm going to pick England Knights.
Yeah, good choice as well.
That's
I think they're definitely strong.
Ben Hapshire, Jake Wilstrop, James Sykes, Mark David, and Ryan Longthorn. I think they've been had a fair bit of fire in their belly and have been practicing it pretty hard and are looking forward to it.
Yes, agreed. But as let me kind of echo what Trevor said, we talk a lot of controversies, we talk a lot about what the stats mean, et cetera, et cetera. The important thing about the WTC is it's a major time for the entire War Machine community to get together, celebrate each other's, having just such a great community. And so that's why it's such an awesome event and so exciting every year.
Well said.
So I'm going to go with Sweden. I'm trying to read through these names. Their names are so hard for me sometimes, and so I'm not necessarily...
Sleipner?
I'm not putting faces and names together,
sure,
which is what's making it difficult for me. But I believe I'm going to go with Sweden Smorgasbord because they have the best name.
Sounds delicious.
Yes. I also recognize some of those players there, and Sweden obviously always strong and probably wants it pretty bad at this point. So I would love to see Sweden win.
Okay.
I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention France as well, because their showing last year was surprising and very strong. And I think they've been quieter about it this year, but I think they've actually been putting the effort in terms of their preparations. And so I wouldn't be surprised. I would call them my dark horse for podium.
They have consistently improved every year for the last 4 years, probably, or five. You know, it just feels like every year they come more prepared than they did the previous year. And I think that that's a really good shout out.
So any final thoughts on the WTC?
I hope everybody has a great time.
Yeah.
I'm sad to not be back this year.
Please do not get alcohol poisoning.
It's kind of a general
life advice.
Mm-hmm.
That is not even a joke, audience. That is actually good advice.
Yeah, especially those countries who may or may not be used to... Let me rephrase that. Especially to those people who may or may not be used to 360-some-odd people trying to hand them a drink.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like 360-proof alcohol or something.
Well, we got that, too.
Mathematically not possible.
Yeah.
But definitely,
we're going to be streaming this year. So shout out to Zosha and the Moose Machine guys for getting together the streaming apparatus. I don't have a link just yet. I imagine it's going to go over the Moose Machine Twitch feed. But the streaming is going to happen. And thanks to the community with their kind donations to pay for the logistics of having them over there.
Cool.
It's very cool. The only thing that's missing is you three guys, which I'm very sad about. But I hope you're watching.
Alas,
another time.
I'm almost done.
Yay, Trevor.
Until.
Yeah.
No, there's no until.
Okay, Josh, do you have a dad joke for us?
I do, Jay. It was an interesting experience. I went to a pet shop the other day and asked for a dozen bees, and the store owner counted out 13 and handed them.
You realize I told this one. Like,
and I said, I know, but I love it so much. I said, you've given me one too many. And he said, that was a freebie.
Oh my god. Oh,
we're gonna make that one a tradition once a month.
Oh jeez, I don't know if I can commit to that level of debauchery.
I can.
So Norbert, we want to thank you for joining us on this annual tradition.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a blast.
And we will have an awesome episode next week of covering some topics.
Sweet, sweet content.
Yes. So on that note, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to another episode of
Chain Attack.
Chain Attack.